Episode 192 of Futures Radio Show, sponsored by CME Group, the world's leading and most diverse futures and options exchange. CME Group's markets help individuals and businesses around the world effectively manage risk. For access to free educational tools and resources for the active individual trader, please visit activetrader.cmegroup.com.
Every day, traders and investors dive in to tackle the ever-changing markets to find opportunity. Futures Radio Show is your number one source for answers to the questions that all market participants want to ask. Veteran futures trader Anthony Crudele sits down with the most influential leaders and top traders in the industry. Now, here's your host, Anthony Crudele.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of Futures Radio Show, where we will highlight our favorite moments of the show over the past month. But before we get started, I want to thank all of our sponsors: CME Group, Trading Technologies, RJO Futures, and Top Step Trader. So without further ado, let's dial into those top moments of the show this month. But I want to talk about what happened with this XIV and the VXX. To a lot of people, this was probably a newer story over the past month, but if you've been on Twitter or if you read blogs, there's been a lot of people talking about this for quite a bit of time now, and talking about this crowded vol trade that many were calling for to blow up. And it did. They were right. But timing's everything. You know, I've been hearing this for this talk for a long time, and you know, it eventually did happen. But this is not something that I follow. I think a lot of futures traders out there were always aware of what's going on with these types of things. And obviously, I started to pay a lot more attention to this XIV and VXX when it started having a major impact on the S&P, which is I actively trade. So, Ewan, you follow the VIX and these VIX products a lot closer than I do. Talk to us about what you think happened here.
Okay, this was a really interesting week. Started on the 5th, I believe, Monday the 5th of February. Normally, the VIX and the S&P kind of are very strongly linked. If the VIX goes up, the S&P goes down. And they typically have a strong relationship as to how much each one moves. That week in February was a case of the tail wagging the dog. Obviously, the S&P market itself is much, much bigger than the VIX market. But the VIX completely decoupled from any rational relationship to the S&P in that week. And it was largely driven by these ETNs. XIV, VXX are the big ones, but there's a whole bunch of others. But they all operate according to roughly the same principle. They aim to track. Okay, XIV is a short ETF. ETN, which is important. We'll get back to that. And VXX is a long ETN. They aim to track the exposure to a 30-day VIX future. Now, there is no 30-day VIX future. So in an ETN, if you own an ETN, you don't own the underlying. All you own is a promise from the issuer of the ETN that you'll get the returns equivalent to what's in the underlying. So if it was an ETF, you can do an arbitrage between what's in the ETF and the actual underlying of it. So, the ETF itself and the underlying. With an ETN, you can't do that because you don't really know how they're going to hedge it, when they're going to hedge it. So, for example, if they hedge everything right on the close, you would have had to do something different to if they'd hedged it all throughout the day. And in this case, what happened is there was I don't know why, but the ETNs themselves massively diverged from what you would expect a 30-day future to be by looking at the actual future structure. And when I say massively diverged, it was like a 40% divergence. And because XIV was the short ETF, or ETN, it essentially went to zero. And it always, basically because the futures had 100% move. The futures have 100% move, something that's tracking them is going to go by 100%. And if you've got something that's short, it really has nowhere else to go. So that was the problem with that. And what, you know, once you've gone to zero, you can't come back. So the VXX went up by 100%, but that's not a problem. It doesn't blow it out.
I want to move on and talk about WILD, Women in Listed Derivatives. I found this to be very interesting. I didn't know about this until I had met you, heard you talk about it. And I think that this is a very important part of our industry, is getting women more involved in the derivative space. This industry pretty much has been dominated by men over the years. But I have traveled the shows over the last 4 or 5 years with Futures Radio Show, and I have noticed a lot of growth in women attendance. And I think this is fantastic. And I'm hoping to continue to see that growth. And you're a big part of that because of WILD and other things that you're doing. So can you share with us on how and why you started WILD?
Absolutely, yes. And also just going back to like how this industry is very polarizing, it's a very hard industry, and it's even harder for women because it is all men. And you have to be very thick-skinned as a woman to be in this industry, I think. So coming just like with that in mind, we had maybe 10 friends. We were emerging women at the time, and we all just kind of would get together for lunch and talk about our experiences in the industry. And we were looking for role models. We were looking for mentors. We were looking for people to be like, hey, this is our, you know, this is our goal. This is what we want to do with our careers. We want to be in this industry. And around the time, Leslie Sutphin, she had a group of experienced women that would go to dinner at Boca every year, FIA Boca. So she had this group of experienced women, and I had a group of emerging women. And we ended up, there was about 30 of us, and we decided to do a breakfast at Ceres in the Chicago Board of Trade building. And we had a breakfast. There were 30 of us, and we didn't even have the whole room to ourselves. We just had one long table, and all the men in their trading jackets were surrounding us. And we decided that, you know, we needed a group. We wanted to form a community. And in my mind, what I wanted was a networking group. If I were going to Frankfurt, I wanted to know that there was like a group where I could just go and be like, hey, can I get a coffee with someone in the industry, just so I could network. I wasn't even looking for sales. I wasn't looking for business. I was looking to like establish relationships. So I wanted some sort of outlet where I could be like, hey, I'm going to Frankfurt. Is there anybody there that would want to meet me for coffee? And it ended up being that I ended up going to Frankfurt a couple of years later and going out to dinner with 10 women from the markets in Frankfurt, and it ended up being exactly what I wanted it to be, which is a really great feeling. But going back, it was 2009. There were 30 women. We decided to start this organization. We ended up starting with 16 members of a steering committee. And then in 2011, we went the nonprofit route. We worked with a law firm that helped us get 501c6 status. And we went from a 16 in the steering committee to 9 board members. And I was elected the president from 2009 until 2014. And we launched in Chicago, and then we ended up growing branches in New York, London, Frankfurt, Mexico City. And then we also had events in Singapore and Switzerland. And our goal really was to help women with educational initiatives to learn more about the industry. At the time, there was a lot of OTC versus futures. So I remember we did a lot of educational, like what's the difference between an OTC contract and a futures contract. We also, one of my really proudest moments was getting Carol Burke to speak. She was at the Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago, and she talked to us about implementing Dodd-Frank at the time and the challenges with Dodd-Frank. We also had Terry Savage speak, and she talked about getting on the board of the CME group. And so talking about, you know, board opportunities for women and how that's important as well. And then we also just wanted to, you know, have people like connect mentors and mentees and have women help other women. I've always gotten a lot of help in this industry. And I think that we just wanted to connect emerging and experienced women, any emerging woman that wanted, you know, help or a mentor or a sponsor, we wanted to connect them. And then there's also a lot of women wanted to give back because they've been helped, because this is a really, this is an evolving industry. And so it's really, it was really important for us to also make sure that we weren't just a networking group, that we were also providing educational initiatives.
I love it. You mentioned persistence. Well, you definitely have it. And I want to talk about mentors a little bit. I would not have made it in this industry if it wasn't for my mentors. And this industry, since it has been so male dominated, it's pretty easy to find a male mentor for a young man. For a young woman, to find a woman mentor is pretty hard and maybe out of reach for some. But you, through Wild, have created a community, an opportunity for the new and young women in our industry to reach out to those women that are going to give back to those women and be mentors to them, I think is just huge. And like I said, I've noticed the growth of women in the industry over the past 4 or 5 years. And I really commend you for starting Wild. And for the women out there that are listening to this right now, give them a website that they can go to learn more about how to get involved with Wild.
Yeah, womenenlistedderivatives.org.
Now, Jackie, I attend pretty much all of the FIA events, and I love them. And I love them because I learn so much here, and I believe that a lot of traders should be attending these events because they need to be engaged with what's happening in our industry. You just can't look at charts and fundamentals and then all of a sudden policy changes and then complain about it. You know, for me, that really bothers me, and I have been taking a much more active role in learning about these regulations that could impact us before they're set into policy, because I think that as traders, most of us are reacting to policy that's, you know, been implemented, and that's just really the wrong way to go about it, I believe. So, Jackie, talk to our audience about what FIA does at these events and why traders listening should be attending.
Thank you for that. I just think that they should be attending if they can, because it is not only is it to learn what's going on in the industry, to understand and influence the policies. There's so many people here, whether it's the CEOs of your companies or the regulators from all over the world, which I think we heard there are about 60 regulators from all over the globe here walking around the halls. It's a great opportunity to catch somebody in the halls or to listen to their panel and see where they're headed. We have a new app on the FIA website for this conference, and actually you can vote as you're sitting in the audience on certain panels. What do you think are the biggest issues? What do you want to see regulators address? What do you think? Where do you think the industry should go? And I think that is a fantastic way to influence where this industry is headed. Traders should be here to feel the mood and to understand what's coming down the pipes.
So one thing I've noticed coming to all of the FIA events and other events in the industry, it seems as though the regulators are working a lot more with firms like yourself. What's the response been from you, from regulators?
Yeah, it's been really heartening to see really the coordination that has begun, whether it be here in the States with the CFTC, the OCC starting their outreach programs. The FCA over in London has been extremely active in working with firms. It's really helped support the ecosystem, because I think everyone knows regulation and compliance is a pain. Even those of us in the industry, you know, we know that it's not something people enjoy doing. It's a necessary element for a healthy marketplace. And so they've begun to work with the firms instead of in opposition with them.
Why do you think that is? I've been coming to these events and I've been in the industry for many years, and I don't remember there being this type of cooperation like we're seeing now. What do you think has changed? Yeah.
I think two things. First, the technology is available, and the regulators are seeing, wow, you know, we're a government agency. We're not going to innovate in the way private companies will, and they want to engage with that. That's the first. But second is cost. Right? You know, as a trader or as a financial service institution, there's a lot of cost around regulation and compliance, and that's not sustainable for healthy marketplaces. It's a giant tax that if you can't work with that and you can't effectively operate your business, will create consolidation and hurt the marketplace in general.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for all the traders out there listening to this, this is why it's so important for us to hear from guys like Brian, because it impacts the end users. That cost gets pushed down to us, everybody. So that's why it's very important to stay engaged and to hear from guys like Brian. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the adoption of artificial intelligence, because this is something that I have recognized from just reading the tea leaves and watching and reading about all these RegTech firms. This is the big component that they're using, AI. And you gave me a great analogy by talking about self-driving cars. Could you share that with our audience?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think the key with AI is that it's going to augment the human knowledge. It's going to augment the human experience rather than replace it. They're going to work cooperatively. And as we were talking about before, the adoption of it, one of the issues is the self-driving car example. No one gets in a self-driving car that is 94% accurate. Right, and that's going to be the same with artificial intelligence in a lot of disciplines. The accuracy is the key. And so by merging kind of human ingenuity and creativity with a machine that can do the really standard, rote, boring stuff, it's really going to make a better outcome for all parties.
Could you explain to us a little bit what goes on with these artificial intelligence that you guys are using?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different types. You know, without diving too much into the weeds, some of the phrases you use, supervised learning, unsupervised learning, reinforcement learning, these concepts are essentially statistics. It's math. How do you take something you've seen and predict a future occurrence of it? How do you organize something that you've never seen before? Right? How do you create endgame agency rewards that push a statistical process forward? Now, that's really technical, but the bottom line is all it's doing is it's making you faster, it's making you more comprehensive, and it's making you smarter. And there are people far smarter than me figuring out how to build those models.
Hey, everyone. I hope you're enjoying the show so far, but I want to pause and thank one of our sponsors, Trading Technologies. I started using TT in the year 2000, and I love it. It is by far the best trading platform I have ever used, and I've tried a lot of them. With TT, you can trade the global markets from virtually anywhere in the world. They are the world's fastest commercially available futures trading platform. I highly suggest you go try out TT, especially because you can try it for free. Just go to tryttnow.com and set up your account. So I get this question all the time. This is Futures Radio Show, and so many people that are listening to the show that are futures traders always ask me, Anthony, why should futures traders care about these cryptocurrencies? Should we be looking at them? Should we be trading them? And obviously, since the launch of Bitcoin futures, a lot more futures traders have gotten involved. But you've been trading for many years, and I'm wondering, why do you think that futures traders should care about cryptocurrencies?
Well, I think there's two really good reasons, and they're related. The first is that I think traders are always looking for asset classes that are new and emerging, where they can get new volume. But in conjunction with that, I think you want to look for situations where not only is there a growing volume, but also volatility, because I think particularly derivatives traders are going to make where they can get an edge is in a market where there is volatility. If you trade something that's flat, you're not going to get as much premium on either futures or options. But if you're trading where there's a lot of volatility, if you think you've got an edge, then you can get a better price premium for your investment.
That's a pretty good explanation as to why I think a lot of futures traders should be looking into cryptos. And like I said, since we've had the launch of Bitcoin futures, I think a lot of us are slowly creeping in and getting more interested. And especially since now TT has offered Bitcoin futures next to the spot. So I think that once again, you're seeing it slowly but surely getting implemented into the industry. So I want you to explain mining a little bit, because this is something I've read about. I've had several people on the show. I am still a little uncertain how it all works. So talk to us about cryptocurrency mining and maybe why any traders should potentially get involved in mining.
So I think a way to think about this, and I'm going to try and de-jargonize this, because I think the typical explanation is, well, there's this cryptographic problem and we're solving the puzzle, and whoever solves the puzzle first, they get the reward. And it's all true, but it doesn't explain what that means. So I want you to think about anytime you go into like a Best Buy or a Target and you're going to buy, say, a television set, and you pick up that television set and you show them a piece of plastic and you walk out the door. And if you explain it to folks that way, that's a really weird thing to have happen. What? You'll give me a $3,000 television set and all I have to do is show you a piece of plastic. But what's going on in reality is Best Buy and Target understand that if Visa or MasterCard say that they're going to get paid, they're going to get paid. Now, what's happening behind the scenes is that Visa or MasterCard are moving $3,000 from my account to Best Buy or Target's account, right? They're essentially managing a ledger behind the scenes where the money's kept track of. That's essentially what goes on with any cryptocurrency. We'll just use Bitcoin as a sort of the Kleenex of facial tissue of cryptocurrency. And we'll say that if I'm going to conduct a transaction in Bitcoin, then somebody has to maintain that ledger. Somebody has to record that transaction. There is no central party like there is with Visa or MasterCard. Instead, it's a community of miners. And what the miners do is they maintain a network of computers, and that network of computers maintains the ledger. It moves money from party A to party B when a product, good, or service is bought or sold. Does that help?
Yeah, no, it definitely does. But I want to make a comment on something that I think is very interesting about people that own cryptocurrencies. I feel a very strong hesitation for them to actually use them to buy things. I feel like a lot of people own these cryptocurrencies, but they're not using them for transactions yet. And I think that's what its original intention was. So I want to know what you think about that.
So I think that what you saw with November, and this becomes a little bit more jargon-ish, is that the community tried to launch SegWit 2X, and that launch failed for a variety of reasons. But in failing, what happened was the community chose not to go down the road of making Bitcoin more of a transaction coin. That is, making our ability to handle more transactions faster per unit time. And so what that did was it opened the door, in my estimation, for coins like Dash or Litecoin or Bitcoin Cash to be the transaction coin. And so what you've seen, I think, since November is a surge in valuation in Dash and Litecoin and Bitcoin Cash comparative to, on a percentage basis, comparative to Bitcoin. And I think that the jury's out regarding which cryptocurrency will ultimately be the transaction coin. Again, I use the metaphor that it's 1998 and cryptocurrency is the internet. And if that's true, then you don't know right now whether Bitcoin is Google or Yahoo or Alta Vista.
What trader has influenced your life the most and why?
I hope this doesn't sound different than the way I intend it to sound, but the truth is every trader, the person that influences them the most is them, right? Becoming a trader is a journey about the self. Right? It's absorbing information. Certainly you can have mentors, but at the end of the day, the best traders are the people that think about who they are, what they're good at, what they're not good at, and try to manage that process.
What's the number one resource you spend your time on?
Curating resources.
What's your favorite book about trading or the markets?
My favorite book, hands down, is Reminiscence of a Stock Operator. It was written by Edwin Lefevre in 1923, and it is among the first reads that any trader who wants to get into this business should pick up.
What's the best piece of advice that you've received about trading or the markets?
Anthony, the one thing that has stuck with me from the day that I started trading, the first thing that I heard when I walked in the door was, you never make the trade, no matter how good it looks. You never make the trade that could keep you from coming in tomorrow.
Now, if you could give a piece of advice to the new people interested in getting involved in trading, what would it be?
Find a mentor and understand big data.
So what's a topic right now that traders should be looking into and potentially get engaged for a policy that could affect us?
Well, I think, the financial transaction tax is an interesting topic that has been floated around more by, I'd say, like Bernie Sanders, and I think it made it briefly into the Hillary Clinton platform. I think it's a topic that's embraced by more of fringe of the Democratic Party and not the mainstream. But I think it's important to remind your member of Congress on why this is a bad idea for the savings community in particular, that the cost of, let's say, a financial transaction tax that seems to be very small, like 0.03%, actually has a really meaningful impact on the savings community, right? That could trickle down and cost pension funds up to $1 billion a year per pension fund. And when members of Congress hear that it's a tax not on Wall Street, but actually on the savings community, on pension funds, I think that does make people pause before they go and support a proposal like that. So that's one example of a policy that impacts not just the trading community, but also the savings community, where they really could reach out directly to their member of Congress.
So could you give us some details on what some members of Congress or the Senate are proposing for that financial transaction tax?
So Keith Ellison has a proposal, as has, you know, DeFazio over the years has had proposals as well, and Bernie Sanders. Some of them would tax different types of assets at different rates, where there'd be a separate rate for derivatives, a separate rate for equities, a separate rate for bonds. And what might seem like a small 0.03% tax does substantially add up. I think one other interesting area we could all look at is the Section 31 fees of the SEC, and also whether the CFTC would have fees for their trading as well, right? There's always an impulse to create a new fee structure to tax what seems like a really small percentage of a trade, but in aggregate, it can have a very large impact on the end user.
Thank you for listening to Futures Radio Show. If you have any questions or comments for myself or my guests, please visit futuresradioshow.com and sign up to be a premium member for free. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes.